to go ahead and start with a summary of this shift while we're waiting for Dr. Berry.
Okay, we picked up with the white team at 45:30 elapsed time. We were into the what we call mission period 3, which is probably the most dense day of the entire flight plan from a standpoint of overall activity. The primary purpose of today's test was to check out the LEM spacecraft, which I believe we did very well. We picked up at 45:30, about 1 hour late in the flight plan, in the crew transfer. And our initial problems we were looking towards were to how do we make up that time we had lost. Previously or prior to the mission, we had identified what we considered certain expendable tests or low-priority tests that we would delete in real time because the object of our flight planning for this entire day was to end the day as scheduled, which is to finish SPS-5 and get the crew to sleep. So the first item we did was delete three of the communications checks, primarily S-band relay modes, and attempt to get the crew back onto their flight plan. Now, as soon as we had picked up, we came across Carnarvon, and the crew requested a private conversation, which I believe has been reported. After we completed that, we picked up the communications tests at the Honeysuckle site. At this time, we recognized that since we were somewhat behind on schedule, we'd have to make up some time. The crew had brought up the LEM computer, and we asked for the erasable dump. This is the first time that we had flown a computer that had been powered down for several days and then brought back online. And it's one of our practices to take a look at the complete erasable memory after it's powered up for the first time. We powered it up, checked it out, and everything was going good there. We jumped right in the middle of a relatively complex series of communications tests that stretched for essentially one rev. And we accomplished above every other communications check that had been scheduled. We had some problems in configuring the ground system to bring the voice back from the spacecraft. However, in analyzing what had been recorded on each of the remote sites during the period of time we ran these checks, we found out that the majority of the times the sites were actually recording the down voice that we were looking for. In several cases, they had not brought this information, or they had not patched it in lines to bring it back to the control center. After we had completed the communications test, the next major task was to prepare the spacecrafts for the docked DIPS-1 burn. The primary tasks that are involved here are making a platform alignment on the CSM vehicle and then aligning the LEM vehicle to the CSM. This takes about one rev, and it goes through a course align procedure and then a final align procedure. And throughout the day, you probably heard us reading back a large amount of digital information to the crew where we were giving them the information they needed to torque their platforms into alignment with the CSM. We came back up, and as we were immediately approaching the burn, we assisted the crew in verifying their autopilot configuration. We ran checks associated with the engine gimbal, the engine throttle. We ran an RCS hot fire check, all of which were satisfactory. Updated the state vector on board and gave the LEM vehicle a target vector for the DIPS-1 burn. Immediately prior to the burn, actually as we were coming over Carnarvon, we had the crew align their AGs to their abort guidance system, to their primary guidance system. This was accomplished satisfactorily. We made the burn over the continental United States. It was about 6 minutes in duration, and I believe we accomplished all of the objectives. The objectives were primarily to evaluate the engine performance, to evaluate the performance of the support systems, particularly the supercritical helium, and to evaluate the performance of the guidance system. And I believe all of these objectives were accomplished satisfactorily. As soon as we had completed that burn, we powered down the LEM spacecraft, which takes approximately 1 hour. Jim McDivitt had a bite to eat and then transferred over to the command module. Rusty stayed in the LEM vehicle, completed the power down, and also during that period we ran three of the communications checks that we had missed earlier, which was the VHF-B check, the secondary S-band, and the S-backup voice check. So all in all, we accomplished everything we had intended to do, everything that was in the flight plan, with the exception of four communications tests that we'll try and pick up later on. We missed the regulator check, which we'll pick up tomorrow morning, and we missed the lighting evaluation. And those were the only items that were open in the flight plan. I think in summary, we find out that the LEM vehicle was as we expected it. It's in good shape, and we're very happy with it. That's all I have.
Okay, Mr. Kraft has a word.
Well, I thought I would summarize the situation as to what happened this morning, give you a little better feel for where we stand and what we plan on doing. During the private conversation this morning, I think we reported to you what the problems were with the crew. We did not quite understand ourselves why they were behind in the flight plan. They asked for this private conversation, at which time they told us that we talked to both Rusty and, as a matter of fact, all three members of the crew. They were in the LEM at that McDivitt and Swiker were in the LEM, and Scott, of course, was still in the CSM. They told us that that Swikert had been sick twice, once before he went over, once after he got in the LEM. We discussed the situation with the EVA at that time and said that we would delay any decision on that. We would discuss that again. It was fairly obvious that during the day that the pilots were able to perform very well in the tasks they had to perform in the LEM. We intend this evening, after the SPS burn, to have another conversation with the crew where we will again discuss the situation for tomorrow's flight plan regarding particularly the EVA.
Dr. Barry?
I think I have very much to add to the illness situation from what Chris has just said, that we might, we've had a lot of queries, and I think it's been passed to you some of the information about medication. We've had a lot of queries about that during the last 24 hours, and we ought to probably just summarize that again for you very briefly. The medications that have been taken for any reason to date are the Mirazine that you were told about that was taken pre-flight by Rusty. Another one was taken immediately after he got his helmet off in flight. He also had a second all on the first night and last night. He had a second all the first night and last night. And we have had a Lomotil taken this morning by Rusty. The only other medication used has been Afrin, which is the nasal spray, which has been used by all three of the crew members. And this is used has been used by them because of the nasal stuffiness resulting from the oxygen environment, which we anticipated and which they anticipated, and is not too different from what we've observed before in the Gemini experience.
Okay, questions? Ed?
Chuck, do you have any ideas at this point what caused Rusty's nausea, and had he eaten before the first attack?
Your last question, yes, he had eaten before. He had eaten breakfast about roughly a half an hour before that attack. I really do not have any idea at the present time as to the cause of this. It's still an open diagnostic question, and we'll see.
Is it correct that he has a, quote, nervous stomach, close quote, or a proneness to motion sickness?
He has had some episodes of motion sickness, and this was noted at the time that he asked for the Mirazine before flight, And so it has been known in the past that he did have some tendency this way. And whether this is involved with this particular episode is impossible to say at the present time.
Is it possible, and just possible, that the IVA, the transfer, the moving around inside the command module, fixing breakfast, could be enough to touch off something like this?
We haven't seen that evidence before, Ed, and so all I can tell you is I really don't know. I honestly don't know.
Dick.
Dr. Barry, what was the time span between the first episode of nausea and the second?
Couple hours. Could you start with the time of eating and just give us some time?
I don't know that I can give you an exact time for that, as a matter of fact.
I think we know.
I really don't know that I can give you that exact time. We got this call. See, they were in the limb is about what, 7:20 or so, wasn't it, this morning, as I remember?
It was 45:39.
What they reported was the before and after.
Right.
That's all they reported.
And so we didn't pin this down to exactly what time did this happen. And so
what time did they wake up and what time did they start going through?
Okay, have you got those
times,
Gene?
1:30 this morning.
We talked to them this morning at 1:30, and that was the one conversation that was reported to you. That's when I had talked, looking ahead at these 2 days' activities. And then we had the next conversation was after they were already in, and following that they had breakfast and suited and went to the limb. Have you got some hours there?
Yeah, they started the tunnel was clear and they started their transfer at 43:19.
Okay. John?
Dr. Barry, I know that at least the literature says that secanol doesn't cause any nausea generally, but is it possible that if you take secanol and try and move around a spacecraft that this might be different than taking it here on Earth? And
John, I guess you can't say anything is impossible. I'd be the first one to admit that. But I really do not think that is the case here. And particularly in this instance, Rusty had secanol used about some 4 times prior to the flight and felt very familiar with its use without any symptomatology whatsoever. So I really don't think that has any involvement here at all. And I think he's had more sleep than, it's very evident he's had more sleep than anyone else on the flight. And I think we might be better off if everyone was taking it right now.
During 8, you released the transcript of the private conversation with Borman. Now, you're not releasing it this time. And at whose judgment is that? Yours, or was it at the Swikert's request?
The overall judgment, I think it's there. Some management that we had a discussion with the crew, and we think that they prefer to keep it private. We're trying to do that with that in mind. We've summarized for you what has been said. We've not held anything back as to their condition, nor what we plan to do.
That's right.
Roy Neal.
Chris, Gene, let us assume, for the sake of assumption, that you decide tonight to carry on with EVA tomorrow, and then in the morning your situation becomes a little cloudy. Can you give us some of the alternatives that would be open, some of the things that you might do? I'm looking there particularly at how late you can delay decisions, what decisions you might make.
There's a couple things we couldn't do, and I guess that might be the best way to do it. We would not plan a normally moving rendezvous up a day. I believe what we'd do, we'd inhabit the limb and continue system checkout. Particularly, I think we'd go after some of the communication stuff we missed and, allow the crew to look around a bit more inside the limb, look at some of the details of its operation, because today they were awful busy, and I think it might be a very useful day in itself.
You say you would not... You say you would not change the day of the rendezvous. In other words, you wouldn't make the rendezvous Saturday.
No. At the present time, the rendezvous is set up, and SPS-5 will initialize the rendezvous for the subsequent day. Now, we could possibly perform the rendezvous on the day later, but we will have non-optimum conditions of tracking, lighting, that type of stuff.
But let us point out that we don't know what the situation is apt to be tomorrow morning, Bill, and if that that situation demands itself, then that is precisely what we would do. We may have to slip the whole flight plan a day if the situation demands that.
Harry Pease.
Has Rusty had anything to eat? Has he eaten anything at all since he was sick?
We don't have any evidence.
We haven't heard any reports
that he
has. Those lines.
I told him early this morning that to not taking anything else. We didn't have him take any other medication or anything, and we do not really know whether he's eaten anything or not.
Dr. Barry, did he vomit on both episodes, and about how long did it last? And
look, we've told you a summary of the situation, and we're not going to say any more about it. That's the situation. We told you what that was precisely this morning.
You said he was sick twice.
We told
once
you precisely
us.
As we know it.
All right. Well, listen. Now, wait a minute. You said he was sick twice, once in the CSM and once in the LM. Now, I don't know what was in his mind. My mind now makes me ask, what does sick mean? Does it mean vomit or does it mean other condition?
We said that in the report this morning, Bill.
In the transcript,
he told the
doctors, he told me that he had an upset stomach and he had vomited on two occasions. Correct.
Go ahead, Arthur.
Going to this evening, are your plans on discussion of EVA tomorrow? Will this be a private conversation also?
Yes, it will.
Okay. Wait a minute, I have one more, if I may. Could you estimate the time this morning on the request for a second private conversation? How much time passed between the vomiting episode and the request for the private conversation? In other words,
it was approximately two and a half hours after they got into the limb, and we were already an hour behind the timeline, as you knew and we knew. We did not understand why they were, and that's when. McDivitt asked for the private conversation.
Go ahead, Art.
Chris, you mentioned talking with Jim McDivitt tonight. Will Rusty have an input? What are the factors that will be considered?
Will. Yes.
Rusty, what is his feeling about going EVA?
At this moment, we don't precisely know.
Go ahead.
Due to these considerations, are you planning on a postponement or cancellation or EVA?
At this point in time, we're planning to continue on with the present flight plan.
Well, let me reword the question. When you take a decision, would you postpone it or cancel it?
I'm not sure I understand your question. Would you rephrase it?
When and if you make a change on EVA, will you delete it or cancel it completely?
We don't know the answer to that question until we have had a chance to discuss that with the crew after they have made the final burn tonight, had a chance to settle down and themselves digest today's activities. And we want to give them that opportunity.
A couple of questions. One, what's the last word you've had on the crew condition, on all three men for that matter, and the other on the business of the EVA in general? Hage said the other day that he considered the EVA, the outside portion, rather unimportant, and we've gotten that indication here today. And if it's all this unimportant, why'd you put in the flight plan in the first place?
Wait, just a minute. Let's rephrase that, please. In the answer to your first question, you have heard all of the transmissions today. We have not specifically asked them how they feel. Our judgment is purely on the basis of how they have carried out the flight plan and how they have sounded to us. And I think that Dr. Berry would agree that they all three sound in excellent physical condition as far as we can tell. Now, the answer to your second part of your question is, we would like to have him get out of the spacecraft, and we so put that in the flight plan. What we're pointing out to you is that we do not feel that that is a mandatory requirement to the lunar landing extravehicular activity. One is at zero gravity. One is at 1/6 G. The other aspect of it is the extravehicular crew transfer, and frankly, most of us feel that that is not a problem, and that's the reason we do not feel that this transfer example is a mandatory requirement from this flight.
I
understand there's a mission rule that says something to the effect that if the EVA transfer can't be accomplished in less than 30 minutes, then the rendezvous would be canceled. Now, if that's true...
That is not a mission rule.
That's not a mission rule. Okay, well, then the second part is, would cancellation of the transfer portion of EVA have any effect on the rendezvous?
Negative.
None at all, thank you.
None.
Come on up here to John. The next row up there, back there. Go ahead.
If, in the eventuality that the extravehicular transfer is scrubbed, what effect will this have on the television tomorrow?
I don't think we can truly answer that because, again, we would leave that to discretion of the crew. Offhand,
no,
I would say
that
the television would come as normally scheduled.
Two questions here. One, is there any... The implication of your comments up to now are that the Rusty's illness were the cause of the delay or getting behind in the flight plan. Is this an intended implication? Was this the cause of that delay?
Yes.
Yeah. The other question is for Dr. Berry. Does Rusty have any history of situations that periods of high excitement or something like this would cause intestinal upset, either stomach or lower down?
No.
I've got a couple, I guess, for Dr. Berry. One, it sounds like McDivitt has a cold or hoarseness at least. Is that true or not?
He does sound hoarse, Jim, and as I said, that one of the things that we talked about 1:30 this morning, he sounds to have a little bit more than the other two, but all three of them have some involvement this way. This is a normal thing that happens in oxygen, and you remember even all during the Gemini series we saw people having some hoarseness and some nasal stuffiness, and they are using the Afrin to try and help that.
Well, the other thing, what have you seen as the necessity for going to these private conversations? In the past, we've had many more medical details over the air, even to the extent of asking them how many meals they've eaten, how much water they've had.
I'd like to answer that, Jim. I think that the crews themselves would like to feel free to completely discuss their situation in the open with the privacy of a doctor, and we'd like to honor that request and have done so.
Well, they didn't feel that way in Gemini, I take it, Apollo and Mercury?
In Gemini, we had many discussions which were not released to the press. It's only been in recent flights that every word has been released to the press, Jim.
One other thing, and probably this is for you, Chris. How could you practice that porch hatch opening, or what would you do?
Well, they could open the hatch without even getting out of the restraint harness.
Mark Bloom.
A couple of questions, if I could. First, I'm sorry if these were covered earlier. Did the dips burn go exactly according to plan, and what about the pieces that came off? What do you think they were?
I think to answer your first question, yes, as far as we can determine from the data we have available at the control center now, the dips burn went exactly according to plan. I think the cutoff condition there was about 0.3 of a nautical mile difference from a standpoint of the targeting, which is well within the noise level. The second item, we asked the crew to fill us in on more detail, and I think the extent of my knowledge, they said that it appeared there were 3 to 5 inches square inches in area, but not necessarily square. They look more like scraps, and that's the best description we've got now.
Would they have been part of the thermal covering on the lamp?
I suspect that's what they were. They're, as you know, when you put this thin mylar stuff on the spacecraft, there are many patches where you have holes, and they patch these, and some of those may have come free.
The other question is just... At one point, before you gentlemen came over here, I gather the crew asked about discussion of tomorrow's flight plan, and it was indicated that it would be better to discuss it later on. I was just curious why, since the crew had already asked, why you didn't discuss it then.
I think from our standpoint, we've got the SPS-5 burn, which is quite critical, and we'd like to get that over with and keep both our minds and the crew's minds in getting that job done.
John Lyon.
For Dr. Berry... On the previous flight, when I believe it was Borman was ill, the stomach upset, had he not taken a Secanol the previous night?
He had taken a Secanol.
And in this case, Schweikert is the only one who's taken a Secanol.
That's right.
Would this lead you to think that perhaps Secanol is not necessarily the thing to include?
No, this does not lead me to that conclusion. I think it's a, as I stated before, I think this is a happenstance, John, and I really don't think it has anything to do with what we're seeing.
Rudy. It's whether I guess that's for Chris or Gene, whether or not in this morning's transcript, McDivitt apparently announced, apropos of nothing, that there would be no EVA tomorrow. And I'm wondering how that all came up. Did he arbitrarily make a decision and he's since been talked to? Or what was the genesis of this?
No, I think that he is jumping to that possible conclusion after what happened this morning. And I think we want the opportunity to discuss that with him this afternoon.
Well, why would he jump to such a conclusion when if after his man had been sick in the command module, then he went ahead and send him on into the limb?
I don't think that even requires answering. I think that the man is exercising good sense.
Rudy Abrams.
Dr. Barry, if this is something's being caused by motion, why do you suppose it never showed up on EVA in Gemini yet?
I can't answer that, Rudy. I can't even tell you why we saw it last time and for the very first time in our program in any manned flight, last time on Apollo. And I, the only thing I can really say to that, I guess, is that it was early. EVAs were never early in the flight, and we noticed that last time in Apollo, very early in the flight, as you remember. And here we're a little bit further in the flight, and that's why I'm not convinced here that it's motion. I can't tell you that it is or it isn't, though.
Were there ever any cases?
Rusty doesn't think it is.
But. Did this ever happen in Gemini?
Never.
Al?
I'm not altogether clear on why some of this work couldn't be delayed for later days in the flight that aren't too busy. Does that have to do with lighting conditions and the communications with the spacecraft? Or, in other words, why couldn't you have an EVA, say, on Saturday?
Okay, I think you could. Okay, but there are several trade-offs to consider. First of all, throughout all the burns we've made to date, we have been optimizing for the rendezvous on a certain day. Secondly, many of your systems are now wet. Okay, if you remember, up until today, the systems were isolated. Okay, they were isolated, the propellants were isolated from the downstream thrusters, that from by a standpoint of squibs, that type of stuff. So the majority of our fluid systems are now wet. Our descent system is pressurized. We're in the condition now where the limb is ready to be used, and to hold off using it just
let me
a good size trade-off.
A little different way. We have stated to you, I thought clearly, that this EVA is not a mandatory requirement. There are other things in the mission which are much more important to us from an evaluation of the limb. Precisely that means the evaluation of the rendezvous, the ascent stage, burning. Now, if we get to the rendezvous, we then have gotten to the point where we have dumped the descent stage. We now have only left the ascent stage and only enough power then and fuel to run the ascent stage unmanned burn. So that would prevent you from then using an EVA after you had run the rendezvous and the ascent burn.
Yeah, I didn't mean to imply just the EVA. I was talking about the whole rest of the flight plan, since one crewman is obviously not feeling well.
We said we have the possibility of delaying the mission approximately one day, and we could make that decision tomorrow morning before we got in and powered up the limb.
Chris, I believe this one would be for you. If you do have to scrub the EVA or any part of it, but go ahead and accomplish all the other objectives of this mission, will you then call this mission a success?
I certainly would, Bill.
And if you went without the EVA, went ahead and did your rendezvous successfully and so forth, considering Rusty's condition, is there the possibility that you might cut the mission short?
I think there's always that possibility, but I'd say the probabilities are very low. We still want to continue on with the flight and probably would do so.
The probability of a shortened mission has not changed as a result of this.
And to my knowledge, nobody's even considered that in the Mission Control right. Center.
And let me ask Gene one thing, because in enumerating the places where you fell short of achieving today's objectives, I believe that you neglected to mention the rendezvous radar self-test, which I'm not trying to nitpick you. I wanted to ask you a question about it.
Okay. There are several tests that are redundant to tests later on in the flight. Actually, we have that test scheduled again on rendezvous day. These are some of the tests that I guess you could say we weren't particularly concerned about getting today. If we ran into a time bind and didn't have time to do any troubleshooting, we pick them up as they're scheduled later on in the flight plan. This particular test, there are some constraints associated with performing this test with the rendezvous radar stowed. Okay? There's a special procedure that we did not have time to voice up to the crew to perform that test. Okay,
now,
so we've talked to the crew on this subject, and we've given them the correct procedures now.
Now, let me ask you for a word of explanation on this, because it sounded a little like a non sequitur when McDivitt said, since we're not going to do the EVA tomorrow, there's no sense in unstowing it, meaning the rendezvous radar, and so on. What was the connection between whether or not they did the EVA tomorrow and whether or not they unstowed the rendezvous radar for a self-test?
Okay.
Mr. McDivitt has been awfully concerned about Rusty hitting the rendezvous radar, and he wanted to leave it unstowed as long as possible in order stowed as long as possible in order to prevent that, and in order to make sure that it's in the best possible condition for him to do the rendezvous.
Okay.
Let's get Pete Baldwin
another
chance.
Let me talk a little bit about this EVA business to give you how we felt about it during the flight. We actually gave serious consideration to giving up the EVA on this flight because of the heavy demands of the flight plan primarily. Both George Lowe and myself felt that the flight plan was very full. We deliberated on that and said, look, the thing we would like very much to get, the crew themselves said, and we concluded that that was the right thing to do, is to go ahead and get the hatch open because we'd like to have some experience with that factor before we get to the moon. The EVA itself of getting out is really not a necessary thing. The crew agreed to that, and they felt that if they got in any rush in the EVA or we had any other problems with the spacecraft, then that would be the first thing we would give up in the flight plan. So I'd like to emphasize that we ourselves do not feel that as a serious deletion if we have to do it.
Go ahead, Pete.
from what something that Gene said earlier, I took it there was a connotation that if you didn't do a full EVA, that there was a possibility of doing some kind of EVA, partial EVA of some kind, perhaps opening a hatch and standing up, tethered without getting out and doing any motion or anything like that. Is there any possibility of that? Mr. Kraft just insinuated the same thing, that they had thought of just cracking a hatch.
I don't think we really can answer that question truthfully. We're going to ask those kinds of questions of McDivitt tonight, and we will let you know what our deliberations have been as to what the...
A couple more questions. Should Schweikert get ill again, could they scrub the rendezvous procedures? Do you have a time between, say, a period of illness before an activity, a more or less set time, you want to see somebody clear?
No, I don't think there's any way that you can do that because it would depend entirely on what the condition was as to whether there would be a time that you'd want to see them and what you felt the risk was if whatever that particular thing was happening again, whether that would it really interfere with the thing.
Did you say rendezvous or EVA?
He said rendezvous. Oh. Yeah, I mean, if Schweikert should suffer a nausea again and perhaps some vomiting.
Well, he got into the limb with no trouble and ran the whole flight plan the day after having vomited twice.
Okay.
So if it's just...
Go ahead.
A couple of short ones. Number one, when would you anticipate we would know the results of your decision on the EVA?
Well, we ourselves would like to have that decision made this evening. Whether we can do so or not, I really can't answer that. I think it depends really on our discussions with McDivitt, primarily since he's the commander of this flight. We're going to take his words for it. And the situation may require that we relook at it in the morning, and frankly, it may even require a real-time decision. And I think we'd be jumping the gun to say otherwise.
And a sort of a compound question for Chuck. Are you going to recommend second off for Rusty tonight? Why did you recommend Lomatil rather than Marazine today? And what was he wearing at the time that he was sick? Was he fully suited with helmet and everything?
The first time, I'm not sure. He was probably in the process of suiting the first time. The second time, he obviously was fully suited. The Lomatil was not taken for motion sickness. It was taken for the purpose that you normally use Lomatil as a medication to stop gut activity, and that was the reason that it was taken this morning. and as a preventative type thing.
Chuck, I doubt he was fully suited.
He vomited.
Well, not fully, no. I meant he had the suit on. No helmet on. I hope not.
John Barber.
Will your conversation?
Well, the second all, if he again felt that he wanted this tonight for sleep, I would have no qualms about giving it to him to sleep at all.
Will your conversations with the astronauts about this afternoon be private?
Will they be?
About yeah. What?
Yes.
About the EVA and the
yes,
condition.
They will.
Okay, we're about 20 minutes away from that SPS number 5 burn. I think at least a couple of these gentlemen want to get back, so we'll take a few more questions. But
can we get Chuck around here for a little while to talk about our seasick astronaut, which we asked for yesterday, remember?
Yeah, but I think these other two gentlemen want to get back. So does anybody have any more questions for Mr. Kraft or Gene Kranz, Art Snyder?
Chris, in these private doctor-patient relationship conversations, when the line goes down to us, does it go down to other laymen in mission control?
Yes, sir.
John Roberts.
As a matter of fact, it goes down to but a very selected few in the control center, including most of the flight controllers.
Can we possibly get a somewhat better time hack on when this conversation this evening will be? What time does this evening mean for those of us with AM papers?
Well, as soon as this burn takes place and we think they're settled down and they're in their eat period, then we plan to have a discussion.
Go ahead.
For the record, Gene, what were the parameters on the descent engine burn?
Time of the burn was 49 hours, 41 minutes, 33.4 seconds. The delta V was 1,744 feet per second. The time of the burn was 367 seconds. And our apogee and perigee at the end of the burn was 269.6 by 109.2.
Go ahead.
I'm a little surprised that MacDivitt had to tell you that Russell's Swigart was sick. I would have thought that perhaps the telemetry might have told you that his heartbeat had increased and his respiration increased, this sort of thing.
We would have if we had it, but we didn't have it at that point in time.
Right there. Go ahead.
Dr. Berry, could you tell us whether you recommend the Swigart not to take any food until a certain time?
No, I told him to that we didn't want him to take any medication and that he ought to look at food as he saw fit, depending upon the way that he felt, and that I was particularly interested in liquids, and that's the way it was left.
Right.
Based on your current parameters, what time tomorrow would you anticipate TV, the perennial?
I checked that before.
Still 75 hours, isn't it?
I think it's 75 hours even to
75:15. This gentleman right here.
Gene? Could you give us a fix on the problems they had with the television and with the voice communications during the TV period this morning?
My knowledge, they had no problems with the television.
Well, the snow.
The snow, we believe, was caused when the spacecraft passed through one of the antenna holes. Okay?
And the voice...
The voice communications, it looks like we just weren't remoting the right voice link back.
Through the net?
Yes.
Okay, we will have to chop it there. We're ready to run the burn. Now, we still get Dr. Berry.
Isn't Rusty the first scientist astronaut who had to go into space in the American world?
There will be a briefing on the probe and drogue at 5:15 in the main auditorium across the way. Every other censorship, I don't mind.